Doug Harsh, Scott Anderson, 97.1. Kang's back at our studios. We're at the Detroit Sports Commission Game Above Golf Classic at Oakland Hills. Kang, you played golf Friday in a charity event, and we talked to listeners and tried to help you as you're not a golfer. You play basically once, maybe twice a year. How did it go?
I'm ready for my tour card. Is golf hard? Is golf supposed to be hard? I mean, it's a difficult sport, obviously. I'm joking. But you know what? When you go out there and you just have a good time and you relax, have good weather, good people, it's really fun, actually. And it actually made me want to golf more. So that's a good
did
thing,
it?
Right? Yeah.
Oh, that is great, though.
So it was a scramble format, right?
Yep. And that's probably why I want to golf more, because I don't have to play my ball.
Yeah, that does help. And the funny thing is, we found out that you were playing with an acquaintance of mine and his son, and the son is a stick, man. He, Silas carried the day, from what I understand.
Silas, a very good golfer. The funny thing to me, though, is it made me laugh, at least. It didn't make everyone else laugh, was he's 15 years old, Silas, right? And he, like you just said, a stick, like just smooth swing, great contact. We played his ball most of the day. And people would say, wow, you're really good. How long have you been golfing? And he would say, a year. And people would lose their minds. They were happy, and then they were, like, pissed really quick.
Yeah.
What do you mean you've been playing a year? A year? They thought he'd been playing, like, since he was seven or whatever. No. He literally picked up and started playing a year ago, and he's better than most. It's pretty funny to me. I laughed.
How about your ball striking? Anything to talk about? Did it go well at all?
I had a couple decent shots, and obviously mostly poor shots, you know. But I never really, like, I don't think I embarrassed myself at all. I didn't, like, chunk it. If anything, I kind of topped it a little bit too, a couple times, you know. But other than that, decent. Had a couple shots that were, I think we played one of my balls, actually. I think when we got up to the green, mine might have been closest, but someone else might have a better angle. So I had a couple decent shots, and that's all it takes, right, for you to fall in love with the game, they say, or something like that. You're chasing that one shot again or something?
Yeah. You usually get that one shot towards the end of the round. It brings you back for the next one.
I putted for a team birdie for one of those. I got mine in there. So I think I did that. I helped out a little bit. And by the way, I was the vibes guy. All right? As long as everyone's having a good time, that's me, man. Keep vibes up.
Sure. Yep. Glue guy is what I call him on the air Friday. He's a glue guy on this team.
But you know what's so important is the people that you golf with, and they were great people, so that worked out.
That does help. What was the charity, by the way?
Poppy. It's for like a early pregnancy loss, infant loss. Now I got to look it up again. I totally forgot. It's Poppy.
Okay, no, it's fine. Yeah. I put you on the spot. Yeah.
Sorry, man.
We'll pass it along before the show is done, and people can contribute, obviously, if they so choose. But so you might come back.
Oh, I'm definitely coming back. Oh, for the game of golf? I thought you meant to the golf outing.
No.
I might come back for the golf on my own. It's the Poppy Project, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be back, man. Maybe you guys should we do a little show outing or what?
I'd love to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'd be. We've done it once before, and the one thing that unfortunately with this game that it requires, unfortunately, is practice. It really does.
That would help.
Yeah. So time at the range is pretty much helpful. So there you go. All right. Well, glad it went well for you. I do have a bit of an update that we will get to a little bit later on. I did go to Chicago this weekend, so I scouted out Hammond as best I could, which was which is quite eye-opening. Quite eye-opening. Story of the weekend, though, is, well, it's kind of twofold here in Detroit. One is the Tigers, who got it together in the last week and have won 5 of 6. They sweep Tampa at Tampa. They take 2 of 3 from Seattle. They were playing teams that were bad and losing, and then they played good teams and suddenly started to turn it around, which makes you wonder, what the hell is going on, right?
Doug, what the hell is going on?
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. But they're winning more, which is excellent. And there's nothing like a baseball team in the summertime that's competing. So let's hope that they can keep it up and compete here for some time. So chance here for them to cut into the lead, whether it be the wild card, which they are, what, 5.5 back? 5.5 back? 5.5 back, right?
You said 5.5 back.
Yeah, with 96 games to go. Or in the division, which is a little bit more of a challenge. But anyway, we will be getting back into the Tigers here in a moment. Let's welcome in Dan Gavitt, who is a senior vice president of basketball with the NCAA, who is here in Detroit for this event today. And Dan, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me on. Great to be at Oakland Hills. Beautiful day.
And you are out here to support this event, but obviously with Detroit getting the Final Four this coming year, tell us a little bit about Detroit's bid and how that went down.
Yeah, very excited to be coming back for the men's Final Four here. Second time ever. First since 2009, as you know. The Detroit Sports Commission did a great job with Michigan State University in bidding for this event, and the Men's Basketball Committee approved it a few years ago, and now we're just months away. We come every month to the Final Four site starting in June before the April event, and so this is our first official meeting with the local organizing committee and with Ford Field and the hotels downtown, and we'll start doing some serious planning here now that we've put the 26th event to bed in Indianapolis.
How many years in advance do you need to have before you start, you know, laying things out in the future? Like the bids comes out, and then when does it come to fruition?
Well, it can be as many as 5 years or so, 5 or 6 years out. We are awarded out right now through 2031, and we'll start a new process. We'll award new Final Four sites next summer for 2032 through 2036. So you have to go far out, not necessarily because of the venues. Oftentimes the venues are available. You know, NFL's not playing their season in April, of course. But we need to get hotels secured and convention center space secured. That's what is what drives having to do it so far in advance.
So for Detroit, what stands out about the Detroit bid? What makes Detroit unique in any way, whether it be from a challenge perspective or what Detroit brings to a table that makes it a good spot for a Final Four?
I think the passion of the community, honestly. You know, it's a great basketball area, the city of Detroit, the state of Michigan. There's great history here. The NCAA tournament's been held in and around the state of Michigan since 1963. There's been 46 NCAA tournament games here in four different cities across the state. Of course, Michigan State, our host institution, as well as the University of Michigan, two incredible basketball programs. So I think it's the passion. And honestly, you know, I think there was some hesitation about coming back to Detroit after 2009 because of some of the challenges that the city had. But the success of the NFL draft being here really, I think, convinced the basketball committee and staff that Detroit had come back and could host a major event like that again.
Interesting. What were some of the challenges in 2009?
Well, I'm not sure there were challenges per se. I mean, but some of the subsequent years after that, you know, obviously the city has, you know, has had its challenges. And now it's just amazing, the renaissance here and how this place has come back so strong. And is certainly, again, like I said, a great area for basketball, an area that we feel like the national championship should be played. And so it just took a while for, you know, to come back and to have that confidence it could be a really successful event again.
So how often are you scouting Detroit over the last few years? How many times have you been here to check out, make sure things are, you know, where they need to be?
Quite a bit, yeah. I mean, at least once a year. We've had regionals here, of course. Back a few years ago, we had Purdue beat Tennessee at Little Caesars. So we've been here quite a bit. I come for regular season events as well to see Michigan State or Michigan play, Oakland. So in and out at least once a year.
All right, so you oversee the men's championship, the March Madness tournament. We've got a ton of calls about tournament expansion. I'm sure you get asked about it a ton.
Yeah, sure.
Tell us a little bit about the biggest motivating factor, because we get more people wondering why than anything else, because they think March Madness is perfect.
Yeah.
So this is something you oversee. Yeah. I ask you, why?
Yeah, great question. And we've certainly heard all the, you know, feedback. This was a two-year-plus process the basketball committee and staff underwent to consider whether or not to expand the tournament. What's happened in Division I is that it's grown significantly. Since the last time the tournament expanded to 64 teams, and that was 1985, 40 years ago, there's 80 Division I schools that have joined that level. And there's also, as you guys well know, been huge conference realignment. The Big Ten right at the top of that list with the ACC, with having 18 different schools now in the Big Ten. The SEC and the Big 12 have 16. So the reason for the expansion is that Division I's gotten bigger, and the confluence of power programs that invest a lot of money have gotten to a smaller number of conferences, bigger conferences, conferences that feel like it's harder to get into the NCAA tournament now with the field size of 68. And so that's why the committee's ultimately decided to expand to, by 8 teams. It's a pretty modest expansion, and it's really meant to meet the needs of the conferences and schools for the next 20 years, honoring what's been so great about the tournament for the last 50 years, but evolving it because it was not in the conference's minds meeting the needs of their member institutions.
Are you at all worried that adding more teams could water down the tournament or that it may help undermine the importance of the regular season? Or should they do away with conference tournaments?
First of all, it's just going to provide 8 more opportunities for a team to come in and play as an at-large team. Those games we played on Tuesday and Wednesday, what we're going to call now the opening round. By Thursday at noon, when the tournament's first round starts, it's exactly the same tournament we've all known and loved for many, many years. It's a very small compromise to get more access where conferences and schools felt like they needed the access. Do I think it waters it down? Well, yeah. I mean, it depends on how you define watered down. Will there be some more marginal teams that will be in the field now that weren't in the field? Sure. But there are teams like Texas was one of the last teams in the field this year, and they went all the way to the Sweet 16, came away from tipping from Purdue from going to Elite Eight. The quality and depth of basketball now is so great that some of these teams will certainly win games in the tournament. Do I think it's going to hurt the regular season? I really don't. I've heard that argument a lot. I think it could actually encourage power programs to play more significant non-conference games in November, December because the threat of losing, the risk of losing is much less now, having the opportunity to have 8 more spots in the field. So I think it could actually enhance the earlier part of the season. And then, the other argument that I hear sometimes is, well, schools will coast or the games at the end of the season won't be as meaningful. I don't believe that at all because teams are always going to be vying for better seeding and for, regular season finish in their conference tournament. So that's just not a thing to me at all. So it is a compromise of sorts, to meet the needs, like I said, of what the membership thinks, is important for the future. Look, in an ideal world, you could argue that it should be a 64 team tournament, but we went way back beyond that 15 years ago to go to 68.
Is there a crazy venue possibility in the next 10 years that nobody's even thought of that you have for the tournament?
Well, I don't know if it's crazy, but we are going to Las Vegas for the Final Four the year after Detroit. Years ago, you would never have thought that because the NCAA didn't have championships in Las Vegas for the longest time. So that'll be exciting to be on the Strip in Vegas. I don't know about crazy. We considered the great venue in Los Angeles where the Rams play. They bid for a Final Four, came real close, weren't awarded. Part of the challenge there is it's not fully enclosed. It's covered, but it has like open air. It's just a big property that has. And I was there for the CFP Championship game a few years ago, and they had terrible weather, rain that kind of came in almost sideways, and so. I don't think we're going to risk going somewhere real crazy with the national championship because, if it's an event in November, you can recover. If it's a national championship, you got to be sure you can pull it off.
Dan Gavitt runs the March Madness tournament here. Detroit hosting the next Final Four at the Detroit Sports Commission Game Above Golf Classic. All right, so the cynic, and we get this, says it's all about money and you're on your way to 128 teams. What would you say to that person?
Well, money is important. I will not dispute that. I mean, we were able to make a deal with our broadcast partners, CBS and TNT Sports, to support expansion. It's a $300 million deal over 6 years, an average of $50 million a year. And because of that, about $130 million will go back to the membership in terms of units for basketball performance in the basketball tournaments. That's important in today's day and age with revenue sharing as it is. I don't see anywhere near 128. I'm not sure. Within the 3.5 weeks window that we have to play a tournament right now, this is the most number of teams you can have because in order to be larger than that, you would have to move conference tournaments. There's not enough time to get conference tournaments played in the window they're in and play this event before the weekend, before the Masters on CBS. So I don't see that happening, at least not in my tenure, and I don't think anytime soon. I think 76 is really the optimal and maximum number.
Anything else new on the horizon that college basketball fans could be looking forward to? I know you guys always got stuff cooking, so Anything you can hint that's coming up?
Well, you know, I mean, in this area in particular, I mean, next season should be a fantastic season, right? I mean, you know, the defending champs trying to get back here to, you know, to defend their tournament championship, the Michigan Wolverines. And then, of course, Tom Izzo's going to have a great team too, a top 10 team with some players that he has back and some great freshmen coming in. So just that alone should be very exciting for fans in this state. New things, you know. The Players Era event is an event that's now becoming more and more valuable for the start of the season. That event gets played out in Las Vegas in November. There's 24 teams that are playing in that event on ESPN. And we're going to actually tip off the season this year with a game at the Vatican between Notre Dame and Villanova, where they'll play in front of Villanova alum Pope Leo.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
Wow. That's awesome.
Who's a Chicago native.
One other thing, you're in charge of broadcasting as well.
Yeah.
Streaming.
Yeah.
How is streaming, what is it bringing to the table? Because it is something that fans are challenged with, is all the different streaming services.
100%. And, you know, there's challenge because of the expense of it, because of the, you know, the challenge of switching from devices, you know, and streaming services. What it brings to properties is younger demo, you know, younger viewers. We've seen it with the NBA on NBC. When those games are on Peacock, the average age of the viewer is 10 years younger than those fans that are watching on NBC or ABC, ESPN. And we've seen that, too, with March Madness Live for the NCAA tournament. So it is a way to bring younger viewers into fandom for your event. But it is the balance is the expense of it, the, you know, challenge of switching from one device to another or one streaming service to another, which has gotten the attention of the Department of Justice as well with right. the NFL, right?
Yeah. So I do have one more question.
Sure.
Between Dusty May and Tom Izzo, I'm sure you hear opinions in the head coach of Michigan and Michigan State.
Sure.
What are your conversations with those guys like?
Well, Tom tried to call me this morning, actually. We were trading messages. Two great guys. I've known Tom much longer, known Tom for probably 25, 30 years. He is just one of the all-time best, in my opinion. Just an incredibly quality guy, obviously a Hall of Fame coach as well. So well-respected by his peers. And cares. He puts time and effort into the game, looking after the game, serving on the NABC board. Dusty's done an incredible job early in his career. I mean, you know, taking Florida Atlantic to a Final Four appearance, and then, of course, winning the national championship this year. And he's a pretty young guy, you know, pretty, you know, relatively new in the business when you compare him to Tom Izzo, for example. So this state is blessed with two great coaches as well as other ones, too. Greg Campion, an incredible coach.
I was about to ask you about Greg. He's opinionated as well.
He's a member here, I think.
I know he is, yeah. And a good friend and a great guy, yeah. Cares a lot about the game as well.
Dan Gavitt, Senior VP of Basketball NCAA. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate you.
It's a Detroit Sports Commission Game Above Golf Classic. And, of course, in support of the Detroit Sports Commission, which helped bring the Final Four to Detroit next spring. It is Carson Anderson here on 97.1. Well, he was honest. When I said cynics say is just about money, and he's like, well, yeah.
I mean, money's important, is what he said.
Yeah. And look, maybe the expansion to 72 isn't going to be any kind of big deal at all. The one thing I've heard a lot is that there really is this small window where you can't, because of their TV contracts, between the conference tournament and the Masters, there's just not a ton of time for March Madness to add way more teams. It just gets unrealistic because the window is so small. Unless they start jamming in, like, playing games, teams having to play, like, 2 days in a row, back-to-back. And I don't think they'd go for that.
No, but it's not going to surprise me if the money becomes more important than conference tournament money. If it becomes larger than that, then they'll just start doing away with conference tournament.
There's something to be said for that, because I'm not sure conference tournaments have always been a really tricky deal. I used to go to the Big Ten tournament every year. I probably went to like the first 10 of them. I remember broadcasting live from down in Indianapolis doing weekend shifts here at 97.1 where I'm down in Indy because I was like, this is an important event I got to be at. And then we had a boss come in and pointed out that it is one of the conference tournaments are so strange because in the moment they feel like a huge deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when the brackets come out, it's almost like the conference tournaments get completely wiped off the mat immediately. Like, nobody's talking about who won the ACC tournament. They're talking about what seed everybody is.
Well, I think we've seen it personally with the Big Ten tournament over the last, I don't know how many years, that it just doesn't seem important at all. And I think largely because both Michigan and Michigan State have been very good programs, and you know they're in the tournament, and how much are they really going to improve their seeding when you get to a conference tournament? You know, the big conferences, the tournaments don't make as much sense. It makes sense from a money-making standpoint.
Yeah.
But, you know, at some point, I think that the NCAA tournament money would make more sense than the Big Ten tournament, the conference tournament money. But, for, as I call them, the crap conferences, when those teams and those conferences, it means a lot more to those conferences because they have an opportunity to get somebody in who normally wouldn't get in. The Big Ten tournament, you know, it doesn't seem like that's anywhere near a possibility.
No. So we'll see how it plays itself out. All right, look, we've got a Tiger team that has had an extremely hot week. And keeping it in context, we always try to be as responsible as we can possibly be and not get carried away with the changing of what this truly means. You can do with it whatever you want. If you're a fan and you think, hey, they're back and they're going to the playoffs, that's fine. And if you are completely unmoved by winning 5 of 6 last week against some of the better teams in the American League, that's fine too. I will say that it is at least encouraging from a standpoint of here's a team that when they got guys back, it's too early to say that that's going to be the perfect elixir, but there's no doubt that it's been, it happened right when Carpenter and Glaber came back. Right when they came back, started winning again.
Yeah, and a month changed over, and here you go. And it's, Glaber Torres is so important to this team because of the quality of at-bats he gives you. He can get on base and draw a walk. He can deliver the big hit. He's got some pop in the bat. This is a guy, used to hit a ton of homers, and it's changed over the years, and he plays a solid second base. You know what you're getting with him. It's just a steady Major League ball player, borderline all-star. They missed him dearly. And Kerry Carpenter is another guy who clearly has pop in the bat. And wasn't off to a great start in terms of batting average, but his OPS was well above average. And for a team that struggled to find bats hitting for a healthy OPS, they desperately needed to get these guys back. And having these guys back in the top five in the lineup, it makes things more interesting for the rest of the lineup and how A.J. Hinch wants to lay things out and, can protect some guys as well and get them better at bats because you can't just pitch around them. So it's fun to see this kind of, it's a little bit of a transformation. Not going to say it's a complete transformation because it's only 6 games, and we all understand that. But, they got an opportunity to start another series tomorrow night. And, these are big games coming up. They're division games. You get Minnesota, and then you get Cleveland. So it's important that they do some damage here.
In the meantime, we got to talk about this short list that Dylan Larkin apparently approved of tradable teams that he would be traded to. And it is short, and I'm curious as to what your thoughts are on that. We will get to that today at 11:35 in the noon hour. A deal that could get Scooble? According to ESPN insiders, they say this might be the one that gets it done. That in the noon hour. Here on Carson Anderson, here on 97.1. I just got yelled at a little bit.
You got yelled at?
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. Carol Hutchins is here, Hall of Fame softball coach from Michigan, and she every opportunity she has to tell people how it is, I heard how it was.
You got a little what for?
I really did.
Interesting.
Like, okay.
Are you going to see this conversation take place over here?
Which one?
Well, with Dan Gavitt and Mark Hollis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's mic them up and just let them. Right. That'd be more interesting.
Talk about a guy who's got some creative ideas of where to play a basketball game.
Yeah, somebody beat him to the Vatican. Well, I mean, was it Notre Dame and Villanova playing in the Vatican? All right, so look, Helaine St. James, Free Press, saying that apparently the three teams, Larkin gave a list of three teams, Minnesota, Vegas, and Florida. Dude, I mean, if I'm Steve Eisenman, I'm like, I'll talk to them. But I'm going to talk to others, too. And then it's up to you. Because you can't just limit yourself to those three teams if none of those teams are going to give you a good offer.
Well, I mean, this is a little precious, isn't it? Hey, I'd like to play for the best teams in the NHL. One that's in the Stanley Cup Finals right now. Another one that defending Stanley Cup championship, but they had a whole bunch of injuries, so they didn't make it this year in Florida. And then the up-and-coming team, because they just acquired one of my best friends in Quinn Hughes. Trade me one of those three places.
And the thing about it is, if you were given the choice, you'd probably want to do the same thing, but this is where you get into, you're under contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
If a deal works out with one of those three teams, great, but I'm sorry, I think you forfeit it. I mean, I guess if you have a no-trade clause. But are you kind of in a spot where you forfeit the right to have only three teams? Like, realistically? Okay, cool, but you're not being realistic.
Right.
Yeah, good. Yeah, you want those three teams. We got a better offer from 2-3 over here. So why am I doing this just to make you happy?
You don't.
Right?
I mean, but this is where the player thinks that they have power because they have the no-trade clause. And usually what that means is, okay, the power resides in you for us not to trade you because we know it's going to be difficult.
Right.
But if you're going to ask for the trade, if you're asking for it, then you have to open it up.
Now,
there's just no two ways about it.
This is – I want to be careful here because it's a report, right? And there could be – hey, these are my preferred destinations. And then maybe the message is, if we can work out with one of these three teams, it's great. But, you know, I might be a little bit more open to other things. Like, I don't want to get carried away with blasting Dylan Larkin on this and saying he's being unrealistic. But if this is a hard and fast list, if this is it, then I'm pretty skeptical that a deal's going to get done, to be honest with you.
Well, here is the exact wordage from the Free Press story with Helaine St. James. This is the Free Press has learned from a person within the NHL, granted anonymity because they were unauthorized to speak publicly, that these are the three teams on Larkin's list in no particular order. And it mentions Florida, Vegas, and Minnesota. So that's the exact wordage of the article. Okay, it's initial three teams. And if I'm Steve Eisenman, I'm saying, yeah. And? No, look, Dylan, we're not necessarily going to try to accommodate you. If you want to be traded, don't want to be part of this team, we recognize that, and we'll act accordingly. But we're doing what's best for the Detroit Red Wings.
That has to be the priority here.
Yeah, 100%. So it's not that those teams can't put forth pretty good packages and one that you'd want to take. It's just that, you know, don't expect that that's where you're going to go because we have to do what's best for our team. And some other teams that we think can get better packages from, maybe they're not going to offer it. And fair enough, then you're going to end up being where you're going to be. But in the end, if it's an underwhelming deal, Dylan Larkin's going to wear 71 for the Red Wings and he's coming in September to go to training camp.
And I am, you know, dependent upon how this list, like what it, how serious this list is. And if this is truly it and this it only, I think it's the odds of him being a Red Wing next year goes up actually pretty significantly.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
What do you do if even if I had a competitive offer from a Minnesota, okay, mm-hmm. but somebody else had a better offer, I'd be like, I like Minnesota's offer. I would make Minnesota's offer, except Anaheim's offer is way better.
Right.
And he didn't put in. I'm not taking pennies on the dollar here. I'm going to give him, trade him to the team that offers me the best package. Period. And if he won't waive the no trade clause to go where I say, then he's only going to Florida, Vegas, or Minnesota if I'm running the Red Wings. He's only going to, in which case there'd be big problems. But you'd be my right-hand man, so we'd be good. Florida, Vegas, and Minnesota. He's only going to one of those three teams if one of those three teams is literally the highest bidder out of all the teams in the NHL. Period. Otherwise, you're a Red Wing next year. And if you don't like it and you're going to sit out, that's fine. But, I mean, how can you do anything other than what's in the best interest of the Red Wings? And quite frankly, I know that Steve Yzerman is in a it sounds like he's in a very sheltered place. I think by design. I don't think Steve Yzerman's here to make friends. I don't think Steve Yzerman's here to hang out. I think Steve Yzerman's here to win a Stanley Cup. That's his ultimate goal. And I think he has a very, tell me I'm wrong, a very tight-knit group of people close to him. And they're the only ones that kind of even know what's going on. And I even think some of those don't know what's going on. I think Yzerman is specifically and intentionally isolated. Do you agree with that?
I think that is incredibly accurate.
Okay. So he may not hear the criticism, but he has to understand. You would have to think that he is aware that this has been a long run without a playoff spot, right?
Yeah. No, I think he hears the criticism.
Yeah.
What I don't think he does, I think what he also said was true, is that he may not let his close circle around him know what he's thinking at this point. I would imagine
he's fine.
Yeah, no,
you run it your way.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's got his right-hand man and Chris Draper, and those two probably are the only ones that know what they're really thinking until it's time to start asking around and bring in your scouting department and talk about, you know, players and other teams that you should covet and how you should move forward with this, and does it make sense? And the whole conversation starts, okay, Dylan wants to be traded. I'm looking at every team in the NHL at that point. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking at this three-team list yet. You know, hopefully by this point they've had enough time to digest this all, and they've got their board of all, you know, the 32 teams in the NHL, and then they're going to figure out, okay, this is the package we want from all 32 teams, or these are the players we covet. And you can rank them. Or you say that it's this or nothing. You know, and then you start to scrap it. Hey, Anaheim isn't going to give us this. All right, they're off the list. Hey, Minnesota's not willing to give us this. Hey, they're off the list, or whatever the case is. But I don't think that you just sit there, if you're Steve Yzerman, look at only three teams. You can't do that.
It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense from Eiserman's perspective to narrow the focus that much. And you know what I would do, too? I would talk to every team that has interest. I would get the best offer, and I would take that offer, and I'd say, okay, fine, here's the best offer. Florida, Vegas, Minnesota, do better than this.
Yeah.
And if you can't, then I'm not wishing ill will on anyone, but Larkin's out of luck. If Yzerman does this the right way, if he gets some offer and Florida, Vegas, and Minnesota won't top it, sorry.
Well, and this is where I think it can get interesting if this lingers through like the middle of the summer, and now you get past the July 1st date, which is with free agency and trades. Well, free agency begins. You can trade, I guess, anytime you want. But when free agency starts in July 1st, is it the Red Wings add to this team, or if they make another trade to add to this team, this roster, is it possible that Dylan Larkin says, okay, you've actually improved this team well beyond what I thought. I want to come back.
If they do something else that makes it.
If they go out and get Tuck, for example,
right?
You know, go out and spend some money on and go get that player. And this is a summer where, you know, some of that criticism comes in it could be valid. If people are critical of Chris Illich for not spending money, they've got money under cap.
They've got money to spend.
They've got plenty
here,
of cap space. So go ahead and use it, and then you can hang on to Dylan Larkin. Because now, Dylan Larkin counts against the cap space.
Here's one of the problems, though. The problem is when this got out publicly – any free agent looking at this situation is going to go, the captain at that team wants out. Do I want to go there? And even if the captain doesn't get traded, why does the captain want out? Am I getting myself into a toxic locker room, toxic situation? That becomes another challenge.
Well, guys,
they're going to have to convince. They do. They're going to have to convince somebody. And maybe if you go to Larkin and say, then you just pulled Tuck's name out of the blue, but if you go to Larkin and say, if we sign him, will you feel differently? And by the way, if you will feel differently, call them and tell them this is nothing other than you want to win and you want to win now. But you think if you can get an Alex Tuck that you're going to win now in Detroit.
Yeah, and by the way, we're saving some space for the following year for your buddy, Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
We'd like to bring him on board, too, just so you know that that would be a plan. I don't know. Look, that's a lot of talk. Nobody's going to know what happens until it happens because that's how Steve Eisman operates.
All right, Wing fans, your reaction. Three teams on the list. Just three. How you feel about it? Is this something that is does it mean that Larkin might be coming back? And can he come back? That's the other thing is, can he come back, right? 248-539-9797. It's Carson Anderson on the road at the Detroit Sports Commission Game Above Golf Classic at Oakland Hills in support of, hey, the Final Four is coming to Detroit next spring. It is Carson Anderson here on 97.1. Carson Anderson, 97.1, open lines, 248-539-9797, on the road from Oakland Hills, the Detroit Sports Commission, Game Above Golf Classic. Let's get to your phone calls. We go to Austin on 97.1. Hello, Austin.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, I just want to say a couple things real quick. If for whatever reason we do end up going with Florida, the starter on that deal is Esa Lundell and this year's first-round draft pick, which I think is like number 8 or 9. Like that's got to be the deal. Otherwise, it's a non-starter. The only way
I think it's a 9th pick overall is what Florida has this year.
Yeah, Lundell is like considered baby Barkov, so I think he's actually maybe an upgrade eventually over Larkin. That being said, but anything if Dylan's going to Minnesota, it's a 3-team deal because Minnesota has nothing to give us right now. And I just want to say, Dylan Larkin will never suit up for the Red Wings again. As far as I'm concerned, like I've always kind of been a Larkin, like not apologist, but like try to, you know, he's tried, right? He's been here. He's a hometown kid, but he can never play for the Red Wings again. He can't suit up. And if Stevie doesn't get a deal made, he just needs to sit home. Like he can never play for this team again. You're the captain of the Detroit Red Wings. You're the hometown Michigan kid, and you're gonna bail on us? I don't think so, man. You're done here. And I think Dylan will regret this forever, because even if he gets a cup, because he's officially tarnished himself in the eyes of so many alumni, you know, guys that have stuck it out, you know, through some tough times here on this team. And he's done.
The other side of it is also some people think that he's a hero for asking for a trade because it's forcing change on a team that has been reluctant to change.
You guys know most of the people in this town don't understand hockey. Then Stevie had a plan, and it's called patience.
Austin, can I ask you a question? Because you said something with such a degree of authority, I just want to follow up on it. Have you been talking to former Detroit Red Wings?
No, but I've listened to other NHLers, former NHLers, talk about this situation, and that's where I got that from. Is you know that this is completely tarnished. Is legacy in Detroit.
You've talked to players.
No, he's listened to players.
You've listened to players. Okay,
listen to former NHLers say that, you know, and guys who are in the know, like, and said that this will tarnish his legacy in Detroit. Like, you know, the alumni golf classic. Like, Larkin ain't going to show up to that now. Like, it's over for him. I don't know, man. Yeah. It's whatever. Everyone's got the right.
Well,
to
I would
opinion,
say this. I think there's always a chance when you get the opportunity to have your say, and speak your piece. And if you have a mea culpa at some point, if you want to stay here, if the team makes some moves in the offseason prior to making a Dylan Larkin trade, if it's done to improve this team, Larkin can come out publicly and say, they've made tremendous strides. This is a team that I want to be part of. You know, this is a big departure from what I was told at the end of the season. I didn't think this is the direction they're going in, but now they're going in this direction. And, you know, Steve and I have both gotten on the same page. We want to do it. Look, there's a speech that can be made. I tend to agree with the caller more than I disagree.
I
tend to think that he's...
Yeah. I think he's probably more right than wrong.
He's kind of persona non grata right now.
When he made the comment, I just wanted to make sure, is he rolling with a bunch of former Red Wings that are telling him that? Or is he...
Is he just listening to this, you know...
It does stand to reason.
Different podcasts with the former players are saying
that. It's not... It makes sense from a standpoint of, yeah, you ask for a trade, you're burning a bridge with a lot of fans, former players, people have been around and supported you. There's no question that that is a factor here. I just wanted to make sure that he wasn't, you know, where he was getting this from and whether or not he could tell us a little bit more about his sourcing, I guess, if you will. But thank you, Austin. Let's go to Mike, who's next on 97.1. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Is it me?
Yeah, yes. It's you. Brandon, go
Brandon.
Ahead.
I'm okay, sorry, Brandon. Brandon, you're next. Hi, Brandon.
So everybody's talking about Yzerman with the Red Wings. It's kind of like when Joe Dumars was the GM of the Pistons. Like, I know Yzerman meant more to the Red Wings, but people didn't want to fire Joe Dumars because they didn't want to, like, put bad on the past. But, I mean, like, even though Yzerman was great with the Red Wings in the past, I feel like if Yzerman gets fired as a GM, I feel like people don't want to fire him because of that point.
Well, there's no question that this is one of the things that you run into from a challenge of hiring an organizational legend. Now, his resume is one that I don't think there's any – you couldn't question it coming in. He had built a Stanley Cup team in another city, and he had Detroit ties. It, in many ways – checks a lot of boxes as being perfect. It doesn't mean that it's going to work necessarily. Winning Stanley Cups is very hard. Building a championship caliber team is difficult. There's a lot of smart people who are working against you. And, you know, if you make a wrong call or a player doesn't pan out, or, you know, you bet on the wrong prospects, guess what? And if you look at his drafts, okay, at this point, at this juncture, between getting very little outside of first-round picks his entire time here and the last four drafts, which I really struggling with seeing how that's going to produce a whole lot. Brandon, there's no question that he probably is given a little bit more time because he's an organizational legend, but at the end of the day, you can't let that be beholden to that forever. You just can't. And that's why I keep saying my faith has dwindled down to about zero.
My faith has dwindled down to zero, too. But I just hope, like, when we watch all the ESPN videos of, like, the Red Wings back in the 90s, we don't think of Yzerman as, like, oh, if he failed as a GM.
I certainly – you shouldn't. Alan Trammell is a player, elite. Joe Dumars – not only won a championship as a player, he also won a championship as a general manager. So did Yzerman. He just didn't do it here. So, you know, it's tough. It's tough because you might have to let a legend go, and that isn't easy. But, you know, you can't argue that it just hasn't been working.
No, but I think it's also probably true that he's got a longer runway.
Carson Anderson, 97.1.